This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft. Yes, Microsoft! Microsoft is continuing to offer great new technologies for cross-platform development. Check out anydevanyapp.com to see what they're up to. Get to see some of the new services that are great for Android developers looking for an easy way to expand to other platforms. Among those things, you get Azure App Service, which is Microsoft's cloud program to build powerful web and mobile apps that connect to data anywhere. You get Xamarin, which Microsoft recently acquired, plus Visual Studio, which makes it easier for developers to build native Android apps, take them to other platforms, and hit all the app stores at once. You get services for mobile continuous delivery and DevOps. You get Azure Cognitive Services to let you tap into a growing collection of powerful AI algorithms, super important these days. And anydevanyapp.com has a link to sign up for Visual Studio Dev Essentials, where you can get all this for free and see other new Microsoft services that every Android developer should know about. And we are brought to you this week by Hover.com. I've used Hover before. It's great. When all you want to do is just register a domain name and maybe get an email address, that's all you get. That's all you have to do. You don't have to opt out of page after page of add-ons that you don't want or need. So all you have to do is focus on finding a great domain name and getting back to working on your great idea. They also believe that you shouldn't have to pay for things that should already be included in your domain. It's awesome. I use it all the time. So find a great domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com and use the promo code MOTOZ at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 294 for Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil. I'm still here. We got a full crew this week, almost damn near everybody.
When was the last time we had the whole group?
It's been a while for any number of reasons, but I'm glad we're here.
Long time.
Yeah.
I've taken some really quality naps while you guys have been busy. Just letting y'all know.
I thought that's what you did, Russell Holly, everybody. I thought that's what you did in VR anyway. It's just like one big nap time.
Yeah, basically.
I'm so in the wrong job. Jerry Hildenbrand is here.
I'm here. For now.
For now. So everybody was kind of worried. I teased it nicely with the podcast post last week. Oh my God, Jerry Tornado, are you okay? You're okay, right?
Yeah, it didn't come that close to the house, but close enough to get everybody to scramble.
And we didn't want to joke about it too much because apparently one person did get killed, you said?
Yeah. Thankfully, it hit in a very unpopulated area, so.
Tell that to the one guy.
Yeah, but it better. Now, see, all right, foot in mouth, I'm done.
Sorry, okay.
Family of the guy.
Yeah.
I didn't mean any disrespect.
Well, hell, I mean, we had like, I'm trying to remember, I think we might have lost one or two people here. Then we had like 2 weeks back to back where we had tornadoes is while we were at MWC was one of them.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, Alex Dobie's here. Finally.
Right. Finally. It's been a while. A few weeks, yeah. It's been about a month or so, or maybe a couple of months. I don't know. It's been, you lose track of time. Yeah, I think last time I was on was pre-IO, pre-Computex. Yeah, here I am.
Here's the important question this week. Is this going to be Alex's last podcast as a member of the European Union?
I could give you the boring, accurate answer, but I would prefer to say that yes, and that we would just float off into the Atlantic or the North Sea or something if it goes the wrong way tomorrow.
Aren't you already floating?
Yeah, I mean, you're not attached
because that's,
currently.
That's how islands work. Yeah, we're floating.
So, I guess we got to call this podcast Brexit or something. We'll figure that out in a minute.
We can figure it out by tomorrow when we'll know which way it's gone, and we can come up with an appropriately humorous title for this podcast.
Yes, we'll have to record like two intros and two outros or something, and
we'll record two entire podcasts. One if it's if it's leave, one if it's remain. Yeah,
and then we'll use the wrong one because that's what always
don't understand these things
when you do that.
Either way, it has to be framed so that it's Alex's fault. Either Alex is entirely responsible for the UK remaining or leaving.
That works for me.
I like how I'm at fault, whichever that is. Thanks, Russell.
Yeah.
Well, you have more of a say in it than any of us in this podcast. So
everything I know about Brexit, I learned from John Oliver, so I'm sure that it's all lies anyway.
Yeah.
So of more pressing matters, I suppose, is this Android stuff. And we actually had something kind of creep up on us a little bit, and that would be Android running on Chromebooks. I mean, it's not like we didn't know it was coming. We knew it was coming. We just didn't quite expect it so early. So, Jerry, walk me through what we got.
Okay, on one model, the Asus Flip, what, Andrew, that's the C100?
Yes, okay. C100 or C100 PA, I think it is in Europe.
Okay. The dev channel got updated to version 53 with support for Android apps.
There are three channels, right? Stable, beta, right, and developer.
Most people are on stable, yeah, and don't know the other two exist.
And that's the way it should be, to be honest. The other two announced, the R11 and the 2015 Pixel, also got updated to dev channel 53, but Android app support is not baked into that particular update. Google says it's coming very soon. To Google, that may mean tomorrow or it may mean 3 months. It's just very soon, whatever.
Wow, who's that?
That's me. I don't even know what that is.
That sounds like a Nexus.
Yeah, I think my Nexus 6P just woke up after like 3 days of not being used.
Everybody start sending Russell messages right now.
Doe is seriously just like, it woke up and just started going nuts.
All right, so we've got one Chromebook on
and
the
developer
channel.
You have to enable it as in the flags, right? It doesn't. It's not like you just update and then it's there, right?
It wasn't for me. Other people are saying when they updated, it magically appeared in their, I'm going to use the word status bar so people know what I'm talking about, the bar down at the bottom. It did not for me. I had to go into settings and turn it on. It's not buried, but it's, you know, in the settings. In either case, it's not difficult to turn on. And once you have it turned on, you agree to the standard Google Play agreement, and then, boom, you've got Play apps.
Oh, you mean turning on? Yeah, I mean, for me, it took 30 seconds. It took longer to, because I just ordered one, you know, as soon as we heard it was out. And it was, all right, enable developer, let all that load, reboot real quick, and then check the box for Google Play and settings, and that was it. In fact, I followed the instructions Jerry wrote. They work quite well.
Well, I mean, it's nothing difficult.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like I said, I'm not sure if you run out tomorrow and buy a new Asus Flip and switch to dev.
Which we can get into whether or not you should do that in a moment.
Yeah.
It may magically appear for you because some people are saying that it did, and I believe these people. So I'm not sure why it's different. But in any case, if it doesn't, we've got instructions on the site exactly where to look to turn it on.
Yeah, it went real easy for me.
It's much better than I thought. I actually had planned out a post. These are the apps that don't work on your Chromebook. And I kind of had to scrap that idea because my list was a lot shorter than I expected it would be.
Yeah, it's really not been too much. And in fact, the one that I thought really had problems with Skype turned out was a Skype problem. Yep. It wasn't an app problem. It was an account problem.
Wait, you're telling me that the Skype app has problems?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Really, okay. The bigger issue, Jerry, I think, and this goes back to we're running the developer channel and then we're running this developer build of Android on the developer channel, is that things will get kind of wonky sometimes and just hang.
Yeah, I've never seen it freeze, but I have actually seen it take a good 3 to 4 minutes before anything will happen.
Exactly.
To me, that means it might as well be frozen because I'm going to shut it off and, you know, restart it. I'm not waiting 4 minutes, but that happens, and that's more of a dev channel issue, and that goes back to the thing where Andrew said most people are on stable and have no idea other channels exist. If that's you, you're probably better off waiting. Not because the apps are busted, but Chrome dev channel is busted by design.
Yeah, it's just not a great experience. Like, you can get the idea of what's going on, and you can play around and have a little fun with it, but I wouldn't want to use it full time.
Yeah, I've never been afraid to hop up to the beta channel to get something that I know is, you know, on the way and it's darn close. But I don't know how often I've ever switched over to the dev channel, you know, to try something out for more than a day or so before I ran away screaming because, you know, you get the thing that you wanted to, but there are all these other issues, like Jerry said, are known issues. That's the whole idea of the dev channel.
Right. And to be fair, Andrew, you and I are spoiled. Chrome stable, it's fail proof. It's a perfect little operating system. So you notice when you're on the dev channel more if you're used to using a Chromebook on stable.
Right, when you every time you go to wake up your Chromebook from sleep, it's just off.
Yeah.
It just, basically, because something's crashed while I was sleeping. Yeah.
Having said that, I don't want to discourage you if you do like to tinker with things. Chrome OS dev channel is, I mean, it's as stable as Windows 10 release. I'm sorry, but it's, and I don't mean any disrespect, that's a lot of hard work, but there are bugs that you would be used to in most any other operating system. So, you know, you need to try and decide for yourself. For me, I like playing with it, but I have my old Pixel here and it's staying on stable when I need to use a Chromebook.
So I want to hear your guys' opinions about how the stability is of just your general app experience. Is it just you launch them and you're using them, you know, other than those outliers like you're talking about that will hang up or something like that? I mean,
the fun part for me
is it noticeable?
Yeah, no, the fun part for me, because when you load up a Chromebook, and if you've never used a Chromebook, it's you sign in with your Google account and that's it, right? So anything you've got in Chrome just on a regular computer shows up. So I've got like all these extensions and just crap that's kind of hidden in the browser that suddenly is in this app launcher. and I'm having a hard time like trying to remember, all right, did I just load that as an Android app or what the hell is that? Or and there's no line between the two. Android apps look like Chrome apps.
And it's going to be a little annoying for someone who hasn't used a Chromebook before, but has a huge legacy of using Chrome on the desktop. Because like you said, you've compiled all of this data and these apps and extensions, and then they kind of manifest themselves slightly differently in Chrome OS. And it's a little jarring compared to somebody who, you know, you get them a Chromebook because they needed a simple computer and they've been using Internet Explorer on their Windows laptop before and they're starting fresh. It's a way better experience when you start fresh, but when you're importing all of this stuff, you know, you throw this layer of Android apps on it, it could get a little confusing to some people.
It sounds not unlike the experience of setting up a new Android phone for the first time. We've all been there with having a gazillion apps to update, everything trying to sync from the cloud at once, and it seems like maybe this is just going to be an extension of that, where if you set up Chrome OS and then you set up the Android app side of Chrome OS, you're not only going to have everything from the desktop coming over, but then you're going to have all your Android stuff that starts to interfere as well. Do you get that impression?
Yeah, maybe, but there's so much like developer channel stuff going on that I would hesitate to slam it with that just yet.
But to go back to what Andrew said about, you know, your desktop experience versus your Chromebook, we also have a post on the site where you can choose what syncs between them. You don't have to have the same extensions and apps and themes.
That's extremely
and
important,
else.
Especially now, because with Android apps, there are going to be a lot of situations in which there's stuff that you're going to use in an extension on your desktop that you will not want to use on your Chromebook now that you have, you know, apps to handle it.
Right. And vice versa. I mean, I use a different markdown editor on my Chromebook than I do on my computer. So I don't want
them
to sync.
The big thing that you guys have been talking about and we've just kind of been observing because we haven't been using it is this thing of deciding between when to use the web and when to use Android apps. And it kind of sounds like you've been landing a lot on the side of, you know, just sticking with the web experience for a lot of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going back and forth. It just kind of depends.
Like, what are some great examples where you would stick with one or the other? Like, obviously, Skype is an example where you're going to have the Android app because that's your only option.
Right.
But for, I think of something like Microsoft Word, where, well, they have online versions as well that are made for a bigger screen versus, you know, the mobile app.
I had to reach over and pick mine up so I can take a look. I mean, start with the simple stuff, like Gmail, right? Like, why would I ever throw myself into the app experience if I've got the full browser experience right there?
Right. And that's an app that has a good tablet layout as well.
Sure.
And even then, I think, you know, when you have a keyboard and mouse, you're like, okay, the gmail.com interface is, you know, it's not beautiful necessarily, but it's efficient and information dense.
This is where Phil and I are different. Gmail is one of the ones where I prefer the app over the web browser.
Huh. Okay.
Just because of the three-pane layout.
Sure.
That works better for me. I know Phil, I don't want to speak for you, but isn't Reddit, isn't that your thing with the
app?
Yeah,
I'm not a huge, you know, user of Reddit, but I and maybe I'm just more used to it. I don't enjoy the browser experience. I don't like the way that different subs, you know, theme, you know, you'll jump from one theme from one to the other. I just don't like the way it's laid out. So I use Relay, which I think is a just wonderful app for it. And, you know, I only see the stuff I need to see and it's all in the same place every time, which is how that sort of thing really should be. Google Maps, not a huge difference, but I think you get more information in the browser.
Yeah. Twitter.
Yeah.
If there was a good third party Android Twitter app that I know will be around forever, the two I've paid for no longer can be used, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah.
That's Twitter's fault, not the developer's fault. But I hate the Twitter browser experience.
I need to hook up, and I haven't hooked up a mouse yet. I need to do that because, and this is a very important reason why, Russell has jumped ahead of me on Skyforce, on the new Skyforce, and I need to do whatever I can.
That's going to add a whole nother level to this.
It is. Like
keyboard and mouse.
You're busting
for
out
these
a keyboard
mobile
and mouse
games.
Just so you can keep up with me?
But that's...
I got to do what I got to do.
It's going to take a game developer to support a keyboard and mouse other than just moving a cursor and clicking like you were tapping.
I mean, we already have a minimal level of this with, you know, people that connect a Bluetooth gamepad to play these games that are... You can destroy people who are just using touch only.
It's been interesting, too, to see the apps that just you can't install. Like Instagram, you can't install it. I haven't tried sideloading it yet. Actually, you can't
sideload
it. Sorry.
Instagram has a bunch of issues in N as well, doesn't it? That's probably more like an incompatibility thing rather than just developer not wanting you to.
No, it's working fine for me in N now.
No, I mean, it used to... back in the early days of N, there were a bunch of issues with it, but now it's kind of sorted itself out.
Yeah.
I think... You know, that there's maybe a need to see a bit of a conspiracy theory there because Instagram is almost bad by design on the web. But I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Is Instagram kind of bad by design everywhere?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's worse by design on the web. I'll give that
but
to you.
I'm pretty sure Instagram just thinks you need a camera.
Yeah.
And that's why it won't
You just
install.
Can't install it from Google Play. Snapchat loads, though, and it attempts to use the camera, though sideways. But if you're trying to look at any snaps, they're all sideways. So
makes sense. Was it the Shield Portable?
I my brain flicked off for a minute. Sorry. Your camera is sideways. When you look at any snaps, the resolution is messed up. So you don't actually see the whole thing.
Oh, well then it doesn't make any sense to me. I'll shut up now.
but there are going to be those issues of forced portrait,
absolutely.
Just like on tablets.
I'm not crazy about Android apps kind of launching in a window, and you can.
Yeah. So what about when you go to like the phone sized window? How is that? It kind of seems like that would be the least optimal way to view those things, except for maybe like chat apps or something.
Yeah. I mean, the horizontal stuff you can make full screen. Let's see. I just made Snapchat full screen too, you know, vertically. But yeah, it's. I don't think it's ideal. And on a display this size, maybe just because I'm old.
That's a 10.5-inch display.
Yeah,
it's
not a
big
screen, yeah. So I want to use everything full screen. And some of that's just this laptop itself, right? It's not the world's greatest laptop, and I'm used to a MacBook Pro. So it's kind of a world of difference in that regard.
It's a laptop of the people, Phil. Don't hate.
No. Don't get me wrong. I think it's really good, actually, especially for the money.
If you've used any other $200 Chromebooks, you'd be like... On your knees praising that thing.
Yeah.
Well, I just, the only thing I have against it is the size. I understand the balance of quality versus price, and I think they did a really good job. It's just too small for me.
Well, like I was saying last week, my 9-year-old's been on an original Pixel, which is way overkill. And like, this is what I would buy her, and I probably will buy her one for her birthday. Don't tell her.
I'm telling.
No.
She's listening right now.
She might be, actually. She's not listening. She didn't care.
But so that brings me to the other point. Obviously, these computers are pretty underpowered in the grand scheme of laptops. But how well do they handle, you know, running two or three Android apps while you're also, you know, running a couple tabs in the browser?
Are they running things? Are they running multiple apps at one time, Jerry?
Yes and no. They run the parts of an app that need to run while the window's not in focus.
Right, you can still get notifications and all that stuff, right?
Like if I signed into Slack the first night it became available, now it's still open. If I turn my Chromebook on and one of y'all sends me a message in Slack, I'll get a notification. It stays open in the background.
So does it handle task switching pretty well? I mean, this is the Chromebook Flip has 4 gigabytes of RAM and a Rock Chip ARM processor that's pretty low end. So,
well, it's low end, but it's not a phone processor. It's what's the latest and greatest? The OnePlus 3's got an 820 and 6 gigs of RAM or something.
Yeah.
Okay, this is still a lot faster than that.
Yeah, there aren't as big a thermal constraints on something this big, right?
Right. It's. I'm not
how
saying.
How do you find it?
I'm doing okay. I'm not switching between a bunch of games or anything, though. I mean,
Look, Vainglory on it is gonna push it, and it runs. It opens, but I mean, come on. And actually, notifications was something I didn't really think about when I wrote that thing up. They're still in that bottom right notifications thing for Chrome.
Yep, they're integrated, you know, perfectly well. It just may not be the way you like it.
And to me, I'm just not used to it. To me, that's the big thing here is there's not really a dividing line between what's Chrome OS and what's Android. And that, I think a year from now, maybe 18 months, that's really going to change the paradigm of these things. It's no longer...
That's kind of what I think about with those notifications. It's like that just it's piped in, and when you click that, you don't know what it's opening.
I don't think of it... I mean, I do now, but I think a year and a half from now, we're not going to think of these as, you know, Chrome OS. It's going to be something different. Russell, I mean, does that make sense to you? Like, it's not Chrome OS anymore, but it's not an Android laptop either. It's this other thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of the interesting thing listening to the two of you talk about this so far has been that it doesn't really seem like it's pulling from either experience. It's kind of something in the middle. And the stuff that's you know, kind of quote-unquote broken here is all stuff that is just polish-related. Like, all of this already seems really well thought out. So, it's something different in the middle. It's interesting.
So, to a certain extent, it's well thought out. You still have... This kind of dichotomy between and it's still going to exist as long as there are Google apps for core things that also exist on the web. So you're going to be left with, when this eventually becomes production and becomes stable, do you use the Gmail web app? Do you use Gmail in the Android app? Like we've already talked about, same deal with Google Maps. You're always going to force users down that choice, that path of choosing between the two, and it's always going to be a little bit confusing. Yeah, you're eventually going to have to marry the two together somehow, but I think there's still going to be potential for confusion there as long as there are these two separate things and as long as Chrome OS is still this web-focused OS.
And there's a little bit, I touched on this in the thing I wrote, there's a little bit of a disconnect between a laptop paradigm and a laptop paradigm and a laptop or even a laptop with touch paradigm. And it starts with the Google Play Store. You've got, you know, the overflow, the hamburger button, I guess.
Yeah.
The three lines, right? In Google Play, it's tucked into the search bar up top. In other apps, I think our app is actually one of them. I'll have to look. It's a little more static. But unlike a phone, you're not, you know, your thumb isn't already on the edge of this Chromebook. So you're not just going to be able to pull over.
That is a button on Android, but it's mostly a swipe in gesture on Android.
Yeah, I mean, 9 times out of 10, if I'm going to open a drawer somewhere, I'm just going to swipe to do it. I'm not going to go up to the hamburger menu. But the hamburger menu isn't in the same place on every app. And that's where things are going to get confusing if you're looking instead of just, you know, swiping with your thumb because you know exactly where it is. It's already on the edge of the phone. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's also, that's the one place that still needs a lot of improvement is swiping. You can swipe using your trackpad or the screen, but it doesn't always work like it's supposed to work. Sometimes you have to use the cursor on the trackpad, click and drag. I don't know why, and I can't pinpoint any examples off the top of my head, but it works sometimes and other times it doesn't.
Oh, the big one, I can't believe I forgot to mention this, and Russell, your kids will probably love this too, is Minecraft on a Chromebook. That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
It's been everywhere else. I wonder if they'll whip up a new version or something just for extra money. I don't know.
Well, so they're actually, they're doing a big push later this year with something called Minecraft Realms, where it's going to tie together all of the different versions of Minecraft into a single multiplayer setup.
Oh, wow.
And so that's going to be a big part of this, is that, you know, you can be on an iPod or you can be on a Chromebook or you can be in a Gear VR and all be a part of the same Minecraft instance.
Well, I've taken part in a discussion, nobody official, mind you, just nerds. Minecraft never came to Chrome OS because as a Chrome app, the source would be available in a way that people could easily copy it, not the way they need to do now. And we'd see crappy clones everywhere, giving Minecraft a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
I can agree with that. I can understand that.
My 9-year-old, you know, she was stoked. She's like, oh, good, you know, as a Chromebook user, she's been, you know, it's not like she never plays Minecraft, but she would love to be able to do it at this size and especially this form factor. By the way, so it's the Chromebook Flip. Don't flip it around if you want to use Android stuff yet. Anyway.
Yeah, so what's that all about?
Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just don't work.
Barely works.
Yeah.
Because I know that before the Android apps, you would flip it around and it would give you this kind of weird full screen mode with a funky tab switcher and stuff like that. It was kind of this weird experience before.
Imagine that with a weird Android app sitting full screen on top of it, or not full screen in a window that still touches the top and bottom, and then you have that huge keyboard in the way. That's something they need channel. To work on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so maybe it'll be interesting to see how they handle that with different, you know, manufacturers and hardware. And I'm sure somebody's already thought of that. But yeah, for now, mm-mm.
So the one thing I have to ask, has anyone tried just invoking the madness that is sideloading Chrome for Android on a Chromebook yet?
Yeah, is it compatible?
That's a good question. I have not. I
haven't tried that yet.
Let's take a look. Madness is the correct way to describe that. But
yeah.
And actually, I read a couple other takes on all this. Yeah, so it looks like you can. And that's what some reviewers said, that now I have the option to use all these other browsers on Chrome OS.
Right. And that's a big deal.
I guess you might want that.
Sure. A lot of people use other browsers.
Yeah, I would love to be able to use Firefox.
Right. I just don't want the mobile version of Firefox, the mobile interface of Firefox blown up to my Chromebook.
Well, what do you think you're going to get? I mean,
I'm saying I appreciate people that want to use a different browser.
Sure.
I don't think that the experience that you want to get is the Android app on your Chromebook. If you need to use Firefox, you could buy another laptop.
I used Firefox on purpose. When we're done, Andrew, grab your Shield tablet, install Firefox, and look at it in tablet mode. It's wonderful.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that it's good, and they do extensions and all that stuff. Yeah. If you're someone that uses Firefox on the desktop, you don't want the mobile version, even if it's close. You want the full version. Right.
I only use Firefox when I want to make sure Uncle Sam's not watching me.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm excited for the prospect of this. I think it takes what was already a really intriguing product and makes it something else. It makes it it already was a viable option for a lot of people. But I think it makes it even more so now.
I think about, of course, it does open up a huge new group of people that wanted to have some of these apps and stuff. I do worry a little bit about the transition period where, like I was saying, with the simpler users that bought the Chromebook because it didn't do a whole lot and that was the appeal, how confusing it's going to start to get when all of a sudden what's the onboarding process when this is in the stable channel? What about people that...
If it's
had the Chromebook already and the Play Store shows up and all of a sudden they have duplicate Gmail icons, they have duplicate everything, it's going to get a little funky.
But you don't, because you have to go and install that stuff.
Well, for now.
No,
for now. It turn into a problem. But,
right. But what happens when the Play Store icon is sitting there from the day your Chromebook just randomly updated on you? and all of a sudden you've got this thing. And then when you hit search and you search for Gmail, and it searches the Play Store for Gmail, and now you have two icons.
Sure. I mean, right,
because
now,
Chrome OS doesn't have good
right
management of that sort of stuff.
Well, not yet. Yeah, right now, if I hit Gmail, it opens up Gmail in the browser like you would expect it to. So yeah, that's the question. Which one does it do? Does it do any of that by default? I don't know. And at first, it might not. They might, well, you know, this might be a multi-year transition into this sort of third.
It almost certainly, it has to be. The two are so different that it's going to be a very, very slow process of getting this onto there, so that when you buy a new Chromebook switched on for the first time, it's just natural that it has the Play Store on that. That process is going to take a long time, and we are talking years, I think, not months.
I know, Andrew, you talked to Hiroshi, and I mean, I've talked down to the people who just are chained to a desk and write code. They all don't think this is going to be as a big of a problem as we do.
They don't. Well, of course, they are going to say that they don't think it's as big of a problem. But of course, they don't know what it's. Nobody knows what it's going to be like when they start rolling out an update to popular devices that have hundreds of thousands of units out there. And they're all people who have been taught to not worry about it because Chrome OS is something that, like, okay, they restart it every once in a while and it has new software features. And all of a sudden they're going to have this huge new portal. That's what I was talking about. The onboarding process is key here. They didn't say exactly how that's going to be handled, and maybe they have a solution for it, and that's why they're not that worried. But right now, they think that it's just going to be a short-term stumbling block with the duplication of apps and websites and extensions and things like that, and it'll start to iron out.
I think they're right. I think the first step is the Chrome Web Store gets folded into Google Play. And you just search for apps, and I mean, both the Chrome Web Store and Google Play can filter by your device. You only see what's compatible.
I would like that to happen.
I don't know if anyone can tell yet, but Andrew's a little protective of his Chromebooks.
But they did say that the Web Store is not going anywhere, which makes it very interesting because, of course, the Web Store is used to download apps and extensions on Mac and Windows, too.
It may not be going anywhere, but I can see it. If you're on a Chromebook, it intelligently puts you in Google Play.
It could very well change a lot. Yeah, it could stick around on Windows. Right. And Chrome OS would be very different.
I know nobody that uses Android, I almost said Andrew, nobody that uses Android has a problem knowing you can fire up Chrome and go to Facebook.com or use the app. I don't think y'all are giving users enough credit.
Yeah, I agree with Jerry.
The really interesting.
I think that it's just the opposite situation, right? Where you're already in this web environment, and Chromebooks have done a pretty bad job of kind of explaining when you're using an app versus, you know, a web page in a wrapper versus just a web page that you open in a new tab in Chrome. And now they have this app layer, which are, for the most part, a better experience. You know, it still takes some time for people to figure that out.
And while we're talking Chrome and Android, the one thing we haven't really touched on yet is something that came out of I.O. We haven't actually heard much on it since then. This whole Android Instant Apps thing, which was mentioned mainly on phones. But I think one of us asked something in one of the sessions, and the answer was that if it works on Android, it should just work on Chrome on Android. So there you have you have the line between the web and the line between Android blurring even more to the point where you could imagine having an Android runtime running on Chrome OS that loads an Android app from the web, runs it on the web in the Android runtime on Chrome OS, and you have an experience where you haven't installed an app, but you've gone to it on the web, and your Chromebook has processed it just like an Android app, and the experience of either using an app that you've installed, using an app that's on the web, using something that's a website on the web, it really doesn't make much difference which one you're using.
Right. And it's going to be a lot nicer on that Chromebook that probably has a faster, more stable internet connection and more power under the hood.
For sure, for sure. And we wrote a small piece on this at I.O., I think.
That's assuming the developer opened up the apps for Instant Apps, though.
Yeah, there are a lot of big ifs there. And another big if is if this ever comes to the Mac and Windows versions of Chrome, and if this Instant Apps feature is ever part of it, you basically have Android existing just as an extension of the web, which is really, really interesting idea.
Phil, the only issue there is that they have to compartmentalize their app to do instant apps.
Yep.
They don't have to do anything specific for Chrome OS.
Correct.
So I don't think that's really an issue.
No. I'm just saying it's not going to do instant apps instantly.
Not automatically anyway. Yeah. But if it catches on, then the possibilities there are just kind of endless as far as Android just becoming this almost what Java wanted to be in terms of being this standard that just exists, yep. whether it's on a phone or whether it's on the web. You almost imagine it as a less terrible version of that.
Russell, let me take this one step further into the future. We're going to have all this daydream stuff baked into Android later this year. And again, I mean, what's about to come out of my mouth is, at least
I can't wait to strap a Chromebook Pixel to my face.
At least a year away. Well, I mean, but again, why couldn't you have this high-end Chromebook, and I still think it'll be called something else by that point, powering some sort of VR experience with Android?
No reason why you couldn't. USB Type-C out. You hook it in, plug it into your face, yeah.
With USB Type-C, it becomes possible.
I was specifically told that Daydream is a mobile-only product.
Really?
Well, sure.
Yes, because I asked
Until
about
it's
that.
Not.
Well, I mean, that's
well,
always...
mostly because right now it's a setup for running content on the local screen, not right. on a remote screen into a remote headset. It's just not set up for that right now.
I don't think Google is to the point where they're even thinking that way yet.
I'm sure if and when this comes out that, Daydream is just this other thing running on top of Android or on top of Play services or whatever, that someone will hack it onto a Chromebook at some point. It will happen. I don't think, probably not on Google's roadmap. Maybe it never will be, but it's an interesting technical thing to think about.
Just make it work with red, green, or red, blue glasses and we'll be fine. And Alex, that's crazy. What are you smoking? That's insane.
Russell, anything else you can think of from your perspective on things?
I think the biggest thing, like Andrew said, is education. Getting people to, kind of adapt. It would be interesting to see how this rolls out into an update to everyone. If it just rolls out with a little pop-up that says, hey, you might be able to do this thing if you want to, or if these features are just immediately available to people. It'll be really interesting to see how Google tackles that.
They almost can't be immediately available to everyone, because if you look at a lot of enterprise Chromebooks, a lot of educational Chromebooks, they're quite tightly managed. So
right.
it's not going to be a case that it's just
part
of the OS.
We're talking about general consumers.
Yeah. Right. As far as education and corporate, the admin environments have the ability to lock all this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. And they probably will, let's be honest.
And they will.
they should.
Yeah. Yes, but I did think about that in the school.
But
context.
It does mean that they could lock out the Play Store. But maybe they want to be able to load up one specific
Certainly.
Android app that they develop for their school or for their company time.
You could definitely
that's the huge part.
You could definitely have a whitelist of apps that you can let people assume.
Right. I think in the beginning, it's going to be an all or nothing thing. You either lock out Android support or you let it all in. But I'm sure that's the direction they're going.
Let's transition off that to the other fun thing I've been playing with. Samsung this week, as part of VidCon, finally announced pricing for the Gear 360 360-degree camera.
And it's not $360.
It's close. Like, it's $349, which...
They could have made another $10 off of people, and it would have been cute.
But here's the thing. They're not actually selling it to normal people yet. You can buy it.
Oh, it's okay. They're a small company, and it's tough for them to make many of these or, distribute them to retail partners, right?
You can buy it.
Let's get a Kickstarter going.
Yeah, right. You can buy it if you're at VidCon, or you can still import it for $50 more, which is if you really have to have one of these. The short version from my end, and we've got our review up if you haven't read it, pretty good 360-degree camera. My big hangups are it doesn't fit in your pocket easily, or if you're wearing like cargo pants, sure. If you try putting it in any other pocket, people are going to look at you really funny, if you know what I mean. The thing's about the size of a racquetball.
On a stick.
There's that. There are some pretty serious issues with stitching, particularly if there's anything close to the camera. And I, Russell and I have talked a lot about this. I think it has to do with how far the lenses are apart from each other.
Which is interesting because, I mean, we saw with the Ricoh and the LG especially, they're more just like a stick, so the lenses are so close together.
Yep.
But presumably Samsung took this spherical approach for a reason, and they knew how far apart those lenses are. But that stitching line, I can't not see it in every one of the photos you've put up.
Yeah. Now, there have been times where, like, if I shared something to Facebook, the line kind of disappeared in the compression. But so many times, and especially right next to the camera and right below it, it's not good.
I especially noticed it in scenes where there was there's light coming from one side. So, like, the exposure is not the same on both sides, obviously, because you're dealing with just two cameras, and that you can't handle that stitch gracefully.
Right. Yeah, those two things really, and then there's the fact that you can't buy it. This is not my favorite 360-degree camera. The one thing Samsung has absolutely nailed, though, is software. Oh, my God. There's no better, and I haven't used a 360 Fly that Russell has, so.
It's terrible.
Yeah, they're hands down, I can't say enough about the software experience. From the time you set it up to shooting, to saving and sharing, Samsung nailed every last part of that. So if you do want a camera that's just simple to use and connects the first time every time and disconnects when it should so you can share and does it gracefully, this is the one to get. It's almost worth overlooking the weird form factor and the stitching issues just for that. They've done that good a job with it.
Well, the form factor thing is actually kind of interesting that you're hung up on it a little bit, because
yep.
The LG and the Ricoh Theta are really the only stick 360 cameras out there. Everything else has this shape. And the reason for that is it's to be more in line with the shape and size of GoPros. So when you go to mount them, like, you take these stick cameras and you mount them on like a motorcycle or a bike or a helmet or something like that,
it
protrudes up way too high. It gives this really awkward feel. And it never doesn't feel like you're going to snap the thing off and break it. Whereas
with the stick on the Gear 360 that turns into a tripod is removable. We should note it's not like when you mount it, it's got this huge stick on it. You mount just the ball onto whatever you're going to connect it to with the tripod mount.
Right. And so it gives it more of an action cam feel when you go to set it up like that. And that to me makes more sense for people who want to do things like strap it to a motorcycle and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But for walking around and holding it, it does make it a lot less comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, it made it. We were all in San Francisco. Was it last week? 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, I guess. And we went out to the baseball game, and like, I didn't want to try to take the Gear 360 with me. It's
conspicuous.
It's very conspicuous.
I totally would have took it and threw it to the center fielder.
Done that.
Versus the Ricoh or the LG, where it's like half the size of a phone, and you kind of just stick it up there and you press the button and you're done.
It fits in your pocket too. To me, that's a big thing. But Russell brings up a good point there, and that's something I hadn't really thought of. But that said, you see the ones I've shared. Anything that I was using the big GorillaPod with is just really, that thing stands out. I guess, you can go and Photoshop some of that stuff, I guess, if you want, but
then it's no longer simple software.
Right. But yeah, they've done an incredible job with the software. One of the other things Samsung announced this week was its own VR thing. So Milk VR is now just Samsung VR, and they've got the Samsung Creators thing. So they're all about 360 video, and they've got Casey Neistat working with stuff. And so I fired that up real quick. And it's pretty easy to share. You just, drag your video over. I'm pretty sure it only does. No, it does only do video. First, if you embed it anywhere, it autoplays. That's like, don't do that, Samsung.
And ever. I couldn't do anything to fix it. I spent way too much time yesterday trying to tweak it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it just autoplays. There's nothing, none of the standard ways to make it stop work.
It autoplays.
Which makes sense if you were going to view it just on the Samsung site
right. And
you want it to autoplay all of a sudden. But if you're going to embed it in 98% of other chances in any kind of other website, geez.
The other thing is their scrolling is backwards.
if Apple would call that natural.
Right. No, it's backwards from, well, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, like I'm dragging left, sucks, and everything's though. Going left instead of the opposite way that everybody else does it. Everybody.
So it makes sense. So all it's doing is it's emulating what would be the case if you touched the screen, right?
No,
versus
no, it's backwards.
Oh, it's like flight joystick.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Hey, Phil. Weird.
Yes.
Can you root it? Is there an Android Wear app? Does it have an SD card? If not, all three, I don't want it.
It does have an SD card. You have to have an SD card for it. There's no internal storage. It has a removable battery, which I guess fine. If you're ever going to be shooting that much that you need another battery, cool.
The nice thing about that is it shows, I mean, the thing is designed to be able, you mount it on, you know, like a GorillaPod or something. Yeah. And you can set up a time lapse or whatever right from the screen on the thing and just walk away and let it do its thing. You don't have to trigger it from your phone or anything like that. So that's pretty important for people that want to do something like a time lapse.
Yeah, it's got a tiny little display that I cracked on mine. The bag is not all that protective. I dropped it. It was like 2 feet, you know, from my hand to the ground.
It's a little piece of non-protected curved glass.
Yeah, but yeah, you do not have to. So a couple other things with that. One is that right now it only works with Samsung phones, GS6, GS7, and Note 5. But it is so self-contained, and they thought through that UX so well. You know, the thing has two buttons plus record pause. And between that and the display, you can flip through all of the settings and stuff and move from one camera to the other camera to both cameras.
Which again leans on Russell's point of it, you know, being something you can mount on something, sure, and use rather than having to, you know, deal with triggering with a phone.
Yeah.
I'll bet it has Carrier IQ installed.
Don't stab it. I would love to see something that addresses the stitching. You know, if they can fix that, that'd be great. I can't say enough about the experience.
Perhaps they'll have that fixed by the time they actually sell the damn thing.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe that's what the holdup is.
That was part of my thinking.
Because they gave them out to people at Samsung Developer Conference, yep, and they're giving them out to, or selling them to industry people at VidCon, and you know, people that are willing to people like you that are willing to deal with kind of the quirks. And they put it on sale in South Korea, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's where I got it from.
But that's it. I don't see many reasons why they couldn't get this thing in the Samsung Experience shops in every single Best Buy everywhere.
I'm still really excited about these things. And my hangups with Samsung is not me saying don't buy it. They're just kind of peculiar. Not even peculiar. I mean, the big one is it only works with Samsung stuff right now. But I really can't say enough about the experience. That's how well they nailed it. And it's not every day that we say Samsung nails the software experience. Maybe it's just so bad on everything else too. But
maybe
really
that's the
did.
Kind of thing that Samsung, having the retail footprint that it has, that I don't think anyone else making a 360 camera has, that they're going to be able to show off and make this really accessible to people. And from then on, maybe just sell
maybe
the
just
experience.
LG.
Yeah, well, LG doesn't have LG stores, does it?
Well, Samsung's bigger thing is retail partnerships like Best Buy and so on.
True. Right. I mean, Samsung does it, or LG does in Seoul anyway, which is where I went to one.
Well.
Russell, maybe I'm asking the wrong person, but Russell, am I too excited about these? I think they're going to be a big deal.
I think that they're a huge deal, and you are asking the wrong person because I get excited about all kinds of dumb stuff.
Ask me. Ask me.
And that's not to say you should shoot everything in 360 all the time, because right. I don't think you should. I saw somebody review a product with the same camera, actually, and it's like, well, but I can see you and I can turn around and then see nothing. So why would you? Okay.
And that ties into a really amazing presentation that happened at Google I.O. About, you know, how cinema and VR work together. The woman in charge of that particular part of Google's VR team is so smart when it comes to you know, how to, you know, set up a frame and how this is so different from shooting with a normal camera. It's a really impressive session that everyone should watch.
Well, now I want to, because yeah, you start looking at things different. You're like, all right, how's that going to look in 360? And it, is there enough to keep it interesting?
I mean, as someone who likes to think that there's some level of photographer. I like the fact that I can choose what people are going to look at when I take and share or show somebody a photo. And that's kind of a whole nother level of thinking about how you capture things. When you're, no matter what you choose, it's going to be, they can look, you know, all the way around, but also up and down too. And they see a lot of things that you wouldn't, you know, I don't want necessarily people to look at the railing underneath the camera. It's like, well, I guess if they want to, then they have that choice. They're going to scroll around. And that's why I don't think that it's set up for an everything situation, like Phil said.
We're going to have to do a podcast in it one day.
Yeah, we definitely are. I think one thing that's going to be interesting is when we eventually get to this, figure out the software for editing these things in a way that maybe you can crop yourself out of them. You take a few exposures at different angles and you can combine them in some way. I think that is going to be really interesting in the future. And when we actually figure out how to produce, we actually figure out what people at Google have already somewhat figured out in terms of how to make content in this new format and how to make it well and how to make it easily.
It's also a matter of resolution, right, Russell? Because these things are just on the edge of not being high resolution enough to be usable.
They're just shy of what it is that people are looking for, I think. And this was something that the guys at 360 Fly had addressed way early, where they were kind of like, you know, we are going to do a 4K model, and that's going to be really important.
For me, using the LG 360 cam, it was more of the fact that the tolerance for low light, the tolerance for any kind of challenging lighting is just basically non-existent at the point where, it's like using a smartphone camera from maybe 4 or 5 years ago. That's what I found. More than just the straight-up resolution of the thing.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I see a lot more use in the already niche kind of thing that LG is doing with its secondary camera on the G5, where it's like, that's a really cool thing. They have this super wide-angle lens.
Until you use it nice. Then,
right, and that has limitations and drawbacks, but that at least has way more of an addressable market in that you can just switch to it, it's on your phone, you can take really cool wide-angle photos and just share them because it's not, you know, it doesn't take this whole rigmarole, even though it's, of course, not a separate device, but that's the big hang-up is there's all these little things that you need to do and how you can share it and where you can share it and all that, and then, of course, the quality that just show me that it's not quite there yet.
Anything else going on you guys want to chat about, or should we get in some emails?
Do the emails.
I forgot to
chat enough.
I forgot to ask people on Twitter this week, but I also forgot to actually read any of them from Twitter last week, so I'm not sure if that crosses out. It doesn't.
Keep
really.
Keep tweeting anyway.
They're going to be really mad at you.
Yeah, they already are. Happy Dad wants to know, hi Phil, Andrew, Jerry, Alex, Russell, and everyone at Android Central. Love the podcast and been watching, listening forever. I noticed that I can't seem to find any more of your video podcasts on YouTube for the last month or two. Are you not doing the videos anymore? Has my Google Foo just completely failed me? No, it's us, not you. We decided not to do video for a little while and see how that goes. And I get that people are upset about that, but I would say, don't be upset about that. That's a silly thing to get upset about.
Video is a surprising amount of work. You have to sit there and stare at the screen and try not to pick your nose, and it's just a lot.
That's harder to do than you would think, especially for some of us.
I know I'm pretty, guys, but you can do without seeing me every week.
Yeah, we just wanted to focus on trying to make the audio sound better and trying to make the show, you know, a little better. And
we do honestly feel like the audio sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think sometimes we're better, sometimes we might not be. But yeah, I think the audio quality is better. I think we're doing a little better on the quality of the show. I think there's still plenty of room for improvement there. The other thing was we were just getting to be on the road so much, you know, have somebody live somewhere every week. And it's really tough to do video when you're on the road. It can be done, but it's hard. And just kind of in the scheme of things, we wanted to concentrate on other aspects of it. Doesn't mean we didn't like video. That doesn't mean we didn't like giving everybody video. But fact of the matter is we wanted to concentrate on other things. And honestly, the show numbers reflected. So I'm okay with that decision right now. Doesn't mean we'll never do it again.
Plenty of great places to get the audio show.
And I'll be honest. Look, I mean, not everybody reads the comments on the blog every week, but there are a few people who just get nasty in the comments about it every week. And the more you do that, the less I want to bring it back. So,
and the more enjoyment I get. So keep being nasty so I can point Phil at it every time.
A couple of dads right there.
Yeah. Jerry at androidcentral.com. Tony says, this is the first time I've emailed a podcast, but I want to let you guys know that I've been listening to the podcast since episode one. Holy crap.
Woohoo.
That's, if you haven't learned, if you haven't listened to episode one, go to androidcentral.com/podcast. You can go all the way back there. It's pretty funny.
Wait a minute. That was an episode one of this podcast?
Yes, I was on it. Me and Mickey. We might have done, I think we did. I'm trying to remember. I think we had some like live shows like from CES and stuff before that.
Yeah, if you want to see how much the audio quality has improved.
Better. And was Andrew around for the old days when I had that horrible Windows box that was pushing everything? And
yes.
Wow.
I remember some sort of Skypeosaurus setup you had going on.
I just remember.
That was pre-Skypeosaurus.
Yeah.
Oh, this is pre. Yeah. Wow.
Mickey,
anyway, I'm scrolling back on the Slash podcast.
Says, I wanted to try
out
Google Listen. Remember that? And I got hooked. Your podcast has remained the only of many that I've listened to that have stayed the same and maintained regularity. Thank you so much. See? So we're regular and stuff. John has a question about Android Pay. How is it that my credit cards work just fine until I get new phones? I got a new phone for work and logged into my account, and I went to add the exact same card that worked in my previous phone. And now I get card not supported. Even stranger, on my new personal phone, my card was working. I deleted it by accident, and I got the same error. How can this be? Could be they dropped support.
I think it was
It's this weird Android Pay like purgatory zone where if you added a card to a certain phone before a certain point, they were doing this. They're doing this middleman kind of thing. Not in a bad way, in a good way where they just handle the compatibility, even though the card from the bank and Android Pay don't have an agreement to do Android Pay the right way. And as soon as you go to add that to a new phone, it can sometimes decide that, you know, we're no longer going to support that. It's really a crapshoot because we hear all kinds of people that say, oh, well, this one works on a new phone from the same bank as another person, doesn't work from, a new card in the same bank, but it has to do with that weird limited run of transitioning from Google Wallet, and they're allowing people to have unsupported cards. And I really wish they would stop doing it and just tear off that Band-Aid so it wasn't so confusing.
Yep.
So basically, there's no way to tell.
Alex, do you guys have Android Pay over there yet? Or it's still coming?
We do. I haven't had a chance to use it yet because my bank isn't supported. But yeah, it launched here about a month ago. And same deal as the US for the most part. The big deal for us is we have NFC terminals, I think, more in more places than you guys do because NFC credit and debit cards took off a little earlier and a little faster over here. So the same rules for that as far as we're concerned. I think you can use your phone, even without unlocking, for up to £30, and above that you need to unlock, depending on your stores that support it. So that's pretty useful if your bank is supported, which mine is not. So there you go.
Yeah, it's the support thing is the whole,
and it's the same thing for any payment service, right? Yeah. For me personally, I think it's also a case of it's a nice convenience if you already happen to have your phone out when you're paying. If not, NFC payments are, I don't want to say ubiquitous, but I would say the majority of certain kinds of stores have them now, to the point where it's more convenient for me, I think, would be to just get a credit card out and wave it over than it would be to pick a phone up and, you know, which is more expensive and more fragile than a card and potentially slam it into a payment terminal.
Yeah,
that's
for me,
just me.
I've noticed, I mean, I've tried to use it as much as possible because I like to see the, you know, how the experience rolls out. And I have noticed that, you know, the cashiers aren't wowed by it anymore because they see more and more people doing it, whether it's Apple Pay or Android Pay. But a lot of the time what I see is stores have brought in the new payment terminals and they have a little sticker on the top that says, you know, Apple Pay is coming or Android Pay is coming. Like, not quite. We have the new terminal. It just hasn't been set up. And some places have been like that for months. And you just kind of wonder,
yep,
you know, how long it's going to take.
Around here, we still pay in chickens or car repair.
Bartering economy.
Jack wants to know about some VoIP stuff. I have a Freedom Pop account that does not really work. It takes 2 full minutes to open the messaging app. I want to get a regular phone plan, but I don't have any money. I'm only 15 and I have to pay my own phone bill. Do you guys use these do you guys see these VoIP services as a legitimate way to get cheap phone plans? If not, what do you recommend?
Project Fry.
He says, P.S. Wait. Says, P.S. I pay $2 a month for my Freedom Pop service. I don't think we're going to have any suggestions that are $2 a month.
No, VoIP can work great, but I've never seen a cheap one that works well. I'll just come right out and say it. Some of the more expensive options work really great.
All the good ones, I mean, either way, I assume that means he's on a no data plan or a metered data plan, rather, not like a bucket data plan. I mean, the simplest one is going to be just download Hangouts and Hangouts Dialer and use that. I mean, that's a VoIP service. It's not the best quality all the time, compared to something that's like a monthly service. But again, you don't want to be spending several dollars a month on just the VoIP service if you're only spending a couple bucks a month on Freedom Pop. But I would say give that a try just because there's no setup. It's low barrier to entry. Just download Hangouts Dialer and give that a try.
Yeah, but he'll have to get a phone number for the initial setup.
No, you can use it with Google Voice.
Parsa asks, real quick and straight to the point, you pull a castaway and you're strapped on an island. Rather than having a pet volleyball named Wilson, you could either choose the Nexus 6P, Galaxy S7, or OnePlus 3. Which do you choose and why?
Do I have the option of getting something that would help me survive?
No.
I would go Galaxy S7 because waterproof and you're on a desert island. Practical.
I would go Nexus 6P because Samsung.
I would go with the S7. That you're going to be outdoors a lot on an island.
Yeah.
In many ways, an island is entirely outdoors.
Yeah. So I want a display that's...
As somebody who lives on an island, Alex would know. Work.
Largely outdoors.
I will also say GS7.
Yeah, if we're living in this
in many
weird
ways,
world.
Florida is also like the outdoors.
In many ways, Florida is an island.
Yes. Oh, man. I think that's it.
That
was
interesting.
That's like every email, actually. I got through them all. Podcast.
Let me write you one real quick.
No, podcast at androidcentral.com. Podcast at androidcentral.com. Anything coming up we need to inform the listening public about?
This doesn't affect you guys nearly as much as it affects me, but next week I'm going to go do this really crazy Ghostbusters virtual reality thing.
That's pretty awesome.
They're going to have a whole space.
That combines two things that are cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to have some things to say about that.
Do you know my doctor's name is Vinkman?
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Oh, a couple of phone reviews coming up from me. We'll have Honor 5C probably next week sometime. We've also got new phones from Wiley Fox coming next week.
Sorry, from who? So,
Wiley Fox.
Say it one more time.
I just Wiley like to Fox, hear you say it.
I like the name.
Yes.
I like their logo,
so
too.
It's this kind of quirky British startup. I think it's actually related to Kazam, which was founded by a bunch of ex-HTC people a few years
back.
Now
you're just making it up.
No, I'm not. That's actually what happens.
Kazam's huge in India.
Yeah, it sounds like a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride thing. Wiley Fox phones.
Maybe. But yeah, so the big deal with them is not only decent hardware. The hardware actually for the Wiley Fox phones last year was really nice.
Super cheap.
Yeah, super cheap as well. So a nicer hardware, I think, than the Moto G and a lot of the cheap Motorola stuff, but at the same kind of price point. And software by Cyanogen, which is the other big deal there, because... And you look at any other startup, you know, even people like OnePlus have had trouble keeping the software up to date, and Wiley Fox has entirely farmed that out to Cyanogen. So that'll be interesting to see what they do this year. Of course, no idea what they're doing other than the track record of what we saw from them last year. So I have to wait and see. And of course, no idea if they're sticking with Cyanogen. Probably they are, but we'll just have to see. And that'll be
Has any company kept Cyanogen for more than a generation so far?
Well, who had Cyanogen? We had
OnePlus kicked it.
OnePlus kicked it. Yeah. Lenovo with the Zuck.
Which was only one. That was one phone. So yeah. we haven't had a success to that yet.
The Eureka.
Eureka, yeah.
They dropped it with the next. Well, no, because you did another phone and they dropped it.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see. I don't see what else Wiley Fox could do if they weren't going with Cyanogen. So,
again. Right, that's kind of the situation where they're not just going to start being able to develop their own software.
Yeah, they
overnight.
Probably don't have the resources for that. So,
right.
Yeah.
And using Cyanogen means they don't have to do Android One and get under Google's iron fist.
And by the way, we're still waiting for a premium Cyanogen phone at some point, aren't we, from those guys? They've been teasing that going back months and months.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
So.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We keep hearing lots of hints.
Speaking of Lenovo, forgot Jim Wicks left Motorola.
Interesting going back and look at the interview we did with him last year for Android History, and a lot of the design ideas that he was promoting, and the idea of the Moto brand and Moto X being this counterweight to the Droid brand, and looking at what's happening now with Moto, I'll call it Moto Z, not Moto Z, happening with that, and that the design language is almost more in the Droid direction than the Moto direction, so maybe that's kind of understandable.
He'd been there for 15 years, so people change jobs all the time.
But because it's launching exclusively on Verizon, you're not allowed to call it the Moto Z. It's the Moto Z.
Moto Z, okay, right. Fair enough.
It's going to my wife's alma mater, actually, Northwestern. Very cool.
So you guys are like friends now.
Yeah, basically.
Well, when you're at his house for dinner Sunday, ask him why it's Verizon only.
Yeah. So there's that.
Further on the phone track, I have an Xperia X Performance coming. And Daniel Bader has one as well, so we'll be able to talk about that absurdly expensive Sony phone soon.
Cool. Yeah. The thing for me on the X Performance
Alex
is
has
just...
thoughts.
My initial thought, and I'll keep it short because I know we're going to wrap things up, but my initial thought is $700 for the X Performance, $400 for the OnePlus 3. It's a tough ask.
Yeah. Couple other things. Our pal Michael Fisher, who we now refer to as Mr. Mobile. In fact, that's the only way we're allowed to talk to him.
Yeah.
If he breaks character, we get to throw things at him. He is now official and live.
And he's definitely a character.
Yes. The easiest way, I think, to find him is we have our phones shortener, if you haven't seen it, phone.es. If you go to, so we just call it phones. So phones/ Mr. Mobile. That will get you straight to him. We're still waiting on the Android N nickname. Supposedly it's coming soon. And then Google rolled out Namey McNameface in the latest preview build.
We ran an article today and just kind of thought on when things might land. And based on the roadmap, I would be very surprised if we didn't have it by, you know, mid-late July.
Sure.
Usually comes with the last developer preview.
So some wise soul decided Namey McNameface absolutely had to be in a t-shirt. And it looks pretty sweet. So phones.
That was Phil.
Yes. phone.es/namey. Namey. I'll put a link in the show notes here too. So it's pretty sweet. Oh, wow. Sold a whole bunch. There's that. Anything else? Apple might get rid of the headphone jack. Oh, no. Everybody's freaking
Shock
out.
Shock horror.
Everybody's freaking out.
I'm so glad that we're just going to keep wetting ourselves about this thing that probably won't happen.
I really hope it doesn't. That would be the best part.
The funnest part is watching all the apologists scramble, saying how it's a good thing. That's the best part.
I think it'll probably... And I mean, look, we got a dog in this fight because Moto, but I think it'll be something... You know,
stupid Moto.
Either you love it or hate it, and either you use it or you won't.
Can you guess how I feel about it?
Yeah.
There are going to be a lot of Verizon people that just... are mad about no headphone jacks. Yeah.
Well,
for 3 months.
I hope Apple does it, because then that means headphone companies will make better headphones that are more affordable. And then when the phone I like finally does it, I won't have to spend.
Well, no, the cynic in me says that headphone companies will just give Apple a bunch of money and make made for iPhone certified versions of everything.
And then I will burn couches.
All right, with that, let's get out of here. Podcast at androidcentral.com. Send us your emails, your voicemails, your huddled masses yearning to be free. What am I forgetting? Am I forgetting anything?
I don't know. That was a good line, man.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, I did.
So the Android Central podcast episode 1 does not show up on the / podcast page.
Really?
So you have to go to androidcentral.com/podcast/android-central-podcast.
What?
Yes. Well, I mean, now that I said this, we're just going to rectify that by then.
Yeah.
But that link does resolve, and it does have a player in it.
Yeah, it does.
And my phone's ringing. And yeah, it goes.
This is why we hired Andrew.
Wow.
Now you let me go. I found the podcast.
I would have gave up. I would have said, it's not there. Phil, you're crazy. Done.
So guess what I've been doing the last 20 minutes?
Show me more. Show me more. All right, that's it. Andrew, Alex, Jerry, Russell, thank you. Everybody at home, thank you guys. See y'all next week.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.